to Volume 6, page 18. Step 4 in the media project is to develop the media plan and arrange for the media buys. Now, when it comes to buying media, it's important to remember that each member of the media works. Now, a lot of times you're going to find business owners who are all worried and they're all freaked out about trying to determine is radio better, or newspaper better, or television better, or whatever. And the thing for you to remember is that they all work. They all just do different things. And what you want to try to do is to create the synergy where the total combination of all the media elements are working together to achieve those objectives. Now, what I'm going to give you here is just a quick overview of why you should use each member of the media and what it does best. And then there's an in-depth discussion here in your manual, which you're going to want to read, that talks about the specific strengths and weaknesses of each one. But first of all, just in a general sense, your electronic media, i.e. television and radio, are probably the best media for creating the want, creating the desire, creating the need, stimulating that whole emotional response, you know, that we talked about of fear of loss or hope of gain. And so if you're in a situation there where you are trying to create the desire, for example, our Michelin tire example we were using this morning, they use the television to create the need and create the desire for me to go out and look at my tires and see that they're not that good, okay? And they did that by using that emotional appeal, that fear of loss, and so on, okay? And so that's what you should look at electronic media probably as one of its primary strengths, is to create the want and desire. Direct mail, which is not really a media, but I'm going to put it in here anyways, because it's the strength is directed targets. You can zero in on specific segments of the market, which we'll talk more about in direct marketing. Magazines, they can be very targeted. You know, there's lots of different magazines out there which target specific segments, and there's very specialized magazines, and you can use those to target, you know, specific groups. Newspaper, the primary strength is in reaching what we call the now buyer, someone who has made the decision, they're going to buy, they're looking for something, they're looking for a deal, and they're just shopping. Outdoor advertising, main strengths of billboards are to maintain high impact, top of mind awareness, and to give directions. It's very difficult to sell much on a billboard because the rule of thumb is on billboards you should never have more than about 6 or 7 words, because people are driving by vroom, vroom, really fast. They don't have time to, you know, read all that. And so it's not going to be very effective trying to put a long selling message there. So in creating that equity position, top of mind awareness, billboards are a good place to be. And of course the directions, McDonald's, this exit, turn right. Radio is probably only second to direct mail in terms of its ability to target. People will develop radio station loyalties, and they will listen to one or two favorite radio stations all of the time. And so consequently, you can utilize that to target and zero in on very specific segments of the market, like the guy I was telling you about that wanted to reach the teenage girls. Radio is a way to do it. Zero right in on it. So, and radio is also quite effective for creating want, like television, where you can paint the picture and focus in on those emotional needs. Shoppers, similar to regular newspapers, but generally appeal more to a bargain-oriented shopper. Yellow pages, strictly a directory for the now buyer. They do nothing to create want. It's just simply a directory for the person who has already made the decision. They already have the want, and now they're just shopping to buy. Okay, and we'll talk more about yellow pages a little bit later on. But now, in looking at all of those media, what's important for you as consultants to understand is that you need to educate your clients to the fact that you don't have to consistently try to figure out which one is better. And you're going to have a lot of businesses who try to do that. They're always doing surveys and saying, well, how did you find out about us? And they're always switching back and forth, saying, well, radio didn't work, maybe newspaper will work, well, that didn't work, so let's try something else. And really, they're spending a lot of money just bouncing around trying to find something that works, when in reality, they all work. And they all do different, so what you have to do is you have to try to utilize each one for what they do best. You know, remember the little story about the Michelin tires. Well, the TV ad created the want. Okay? Then the guy comes home and he hears it on the radio, which reinforces that want. He comes home, looks in the newspaper. What's he looking for? Specific prices and items and sizes and all the specific things that a now buyer would want to have. And then he goes to the yellow pages to try to, you know, when he can't remember where the address is of the particular store. So it's a synergy. They're all working together. And you can't really say that any one was any more important or any less important than any other. And so what you want to do then is try to maximize the success of the media plan by utilizing the strengths of each member of the media. Okay? Does that make sense, guys? Do you have any questions or problems or thoughts about that?
Where does direct mail fall as far as, other than strength of targeting, but as far as its ability to create want?
Well, it can do both. It can do all of that. Okay, and direct mail or direct marketing, which is a part of direct marketing, is one of the fastest growing, you know, trends in marketing today. Because of those factors, it can, to a certain extent, do all of that. Because, you know, we are dealing now in an age of you know, shifting away from the mass media to the individualized marketing, which is exactly what direct mail is. You know, it's very specifically targeted to a specific person, and so you can do a lot of those same things. You can create the want. You can, you know, have the offer. You can, you know, do the whole thing. Okay, and you can to a certain extent in all the media. Now, don't get me wrong when I say that, you know, and don't think that TV only creates wants or that newspaper only is for the now buyer or whatever. They all do a little bit of all of it. They all do a little bit of all of it, but those are just the primary strengths or the primary reasons as to why you should utilize each one of them. Does that answer your question, Jeff? Okay. All right, so then beginning on page 19... specific strengths and weaknesses of the media, and you guys can read this, and you need to become familiar with this. But again, I don't want you to think that you have to be a media expert before you go out and start doing your consulting work, because you don't, okay? Just the stuff that you have learned here today makes you probably more of a you know, a resource to your clients when it comes to media than doing a lot of these other things. So... okay, you're going to read that, and then page 26, 27, 28, there's some ways of talking about how to utilize each one of those particular members of the media effectively on up through page 34, okay? So I'm not going to go through all that with you here today, but I want you to read that. I want you to study that. It will, you know, give you some good insights into how to effectively utilize each member of the media. Okay, page 34. Page 34. I want to spend just a minute talking about reach and frequency. Remember, we said there are three things that determine the success of any media that you do. What are those three things? What are the three things?
Reach, frequency, and message.
Reach, frequency, and message. Okay, now we talked a lot about message earlier. Let's talk about reach and frequency. Page 34, about halfway down, it says reach and frequency. In developing a media plan, it's crucial that you consider the reach and frequency of your plan. You need to make sure that you are reaching enough of the right people and reaching them often enough to be successful. Most media reps will be able to help you determine the best way to go about this with each of their media, but there are a couple of things that you need to be aware of. Number one, media reps get paid on commission. Consequently, they may try to sell you and your client more than you really need. Number two, there are some ways of measuring reach and frequency, but they are not the gospel. You must always take into consideration the objectives of the plan and the compelling nature of the message. Usually, the more compelling the message, the less frequency that is required to achieve the goals. Also, if the message is not compelling, it does not matter how much frequency you have, it's not going to work. So you must look at all elements in total to determine the proper amounts of reach and frequency. Okay, now, the elements or the concepts of reach and frequency probably become, are probably used more often in broadcast media, radio and TV necessarily, than they are in newspaper. So I want you to understand a little concept that's kind of pervading the broadcast industry right now. It's been around for a long time, but it's something that's becoming really quite well used, and you know, a lot of media reps, particularly in radio, are talking about this, and so I want you to be aware of it in case you run up against this. It's called the concept of OES, which means optimum effective scheduling. Now, what optimum effective scheduling is a way of calculating frequency. It's a method for determining how many ads you should run to maximize your success. And in the back of your volume number 6, okay, back where we were looking at all those graphs a minute ago, if you'll turn back there, there's a little thing here. It's called How to Write and Schedule Effective Radio Commercials. Okay, and this is the OES system. Now, I'm just going to give you a quick little lesson in how this OES works. It has been determined through lots of research and study over the years that assuming that you have a compelling message, you have a compelling offer and all that stuff, that a person should be exposed to an ad about 3 times before it really maximizes its success. Okay, in other words, you have to be exposed to a message about 3 times before somebody really tends to act on it. Now, that's the research. I'm not going to say that that's gospel or not, but that's kind of what they say, whoever they are. Okay. Now, they have developed this concept of optimum effective scheduling to help you to determine the optimum number of radio ads that you should buy to maximize your chance for success and minimize the overkill. In other words, you don't want to run too much, you don't want to run too little, you want to run just right. And I'm going to teach you some terminology here that you need to know, okay? Audience in both television and radio is measured in a variety of ways, but there's a couple of terms that you need to know. One is the concept of cume. You'll hear a lot of media reps talk about this concept of cume. What cume means is how many different people will be listening to that station or watching that station over the course of a given week. All right? So let's say that in your market area, talking to a radio station, and they say that they have a cume of 20,000 people. That's the same thing as their circulation. Like you talk about a newspaper circulation or magazine circulation, cume is the circulation in broadcasting. It's always over the period of a week. Well, it can be measured over any time period that you want, but usually it's described as over a week. Okay? But you can measure it over whatever period that you want.
You said different people.
Different people. Okay?
Given time or so?
No. This is totally different people. How many different people would be exposed to that station over the course of a week?
Yeah, I listen to it every day of the week. I only count for one.
You only count for one. I only listen to it for 5 minutes a week. I count as one. Okay? So that's how many different people. Now, the other measurement is what's called average quarter hour. AQH, average quarter hour. What average quarter hour is the opposite, what you were just talking about. It is the measurement of how many people are listening at any given 15-minute interval. Okay? So if I only listen once during the week in a 15-minute period, I'm just counted once. If you listen every day for 15 minutes a day, then you're counted 5 times. Okay? So This is how many different people would be listening at any particular given 15-minute interval. And this is measured every 15 minutes over the course of the day. So you could look, and in the United States, this is all measured by a company called Arbitron. In Canada, it's all measured by a company called the BBM, Bureau of Broadcast Measurement. And so you can look at any given 15-minute interval, and it will tell you exactly how many folks are listening to that particular station at that time. Okay, so let's say that our station here, at any given 15-minute interval, the average quarter hour, or the average number of people listening, is 2,000. Okay? Does that all make sense? Okay? Can you get those? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like every radio station in Canada has it, or, you know, if not, call the BBM, call Arbitron. Okay? It's measured. It's done, you know, they measure it by doing surveys on a regular basis. All right, so these are two critical pieces of information that you need to know about the media. All right, now, there's another piece of information, quite well-used, and you know, a lot of media reps, particularly in radio, are talking about this, and so I want you to be aware of it in case you, you know, run up against this. It's called the concept of OES, which means optimum effective scheduling. Now, what optimum effective scheduling is a way of calculating frequency. It's a method for determining how many ads you should run to maximize your success. And in the back of your volume number 6, okay, back where we were looking at all those graphs a minute ago, if you'll turn back there, there's a little thing here. It's called How to Write and Schedule Effective Radio Commercials. Okay, and this is the OES system. Now, I'm just going to give you a quick little lesson in how this OES works. It has been determined through lots of research and study over the years that assuming that you have a compelling message, you have a compelling offer and all that stuff, that a person should be exposed to an ad about 3 times before it really maximizes its success. Okay, in other words, you have to be exposed to a message about 3 times before somebody really tends to act on it. Now, that's the research. I'm not going to say that that's gospel or not, but that's kind of what they say, whoever they are. Okay. Now, they have developed this concept of optimum effective scheduling to help you to determine the optimum number of radio ads that you should buy to maximize your chance for success and minimize the overkill. In other words, you don't want to run too much, you don't want to run too little, you want to run just right. And I'm going to teach you some terminology here that you need to know, okay? Audience in both television and radio is measured in a variety of ways, but there's a couple of terms that you need to know. One is the concept of QM. You'll hear a lot of media reps talk about this concept of QM. What QM means is how many different people will be listening to that station or watching that station over the course of a given week. All right? So let's say that in you know, your market area, talking to a radio station, and they say that they have a QM of 20,000 people. That's the same thing as their circulation. Like you talk about a newspaper circulation or magazine circulation, QM is the circulation in broadcasting. It's always over the period of a week. Well, it can be measured over any time period that you want, but usually it's described as over a week. Okay? But you can measure it over whatever period that you want.
You said different people.
Right? Different people. Okay?
Any given time or
no. This is totally different people. How many different people would be exposed to that station over the course of a week?
I listen to it every day of the week. I only count for one.
You only count for one. I only listen to it for 5 minutes a week. I count as one. Okay? So that's how many different people. Now, the other measurement is what's called average quarter hour, AQH, average quarter hour. What average quarter hour is the opposite, what you were just talking about. It is the measurement of how many people are listening at any given 15-minute interval. Okay? So if I only listen once during the week in a 15-minute period, I'm just counted once. If you listen every day for 15 minutes a day, then you're counted five times. Okay? So this is how many different people would be listening at any particular given 15-minute interval. And this is measured every 15 minutes over the course of the day. So you could look, and in the United States, this is all measured by a company called Arbitron. In Canada, it's all measured by a company called the BBM, Bureau of Broadcast Measurement. And so you can look at any given 15-minute interval, and it will tell you exactly how many folks are listening to that particular station at that time. Okay, so let's say that our station here, at any given 15-minute interval, the average quarter hour, or the average number of people listening, is 2,000. Okay? Does that all make sense? Okay? Can you get those? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like every radio station in Canada has it, or, you know, if not, call the BBM, call Arbitron. Okay? It's measured. It's done, you know, they measure it by doing surveys on a regular basis. All right, so these are two critical pieces of information that you need to know about the media. All right, now there's another piece of information that is derived from these two things called the turnover ratio. Okay? And it's simply a measurement of how often the audience changes. Okay, so for example, if you have a cume of 20,000, in other words, 20,000 different people over the course of the week, and an average quarter hour of 2,000 people, so at any given point in time you have 2,000 different people listening, you can calculate your turnover ratio, which is simply a function of dividing the cume by the average quarter hour. And that's going to tell you how often over the course of the week the audience changes. So in this case, how often does the audience change over the course of a week? 10 times. Okay? So the turnover ratio is 10. And basically all that says is that there's 10 different audiences that listen every 15 minutes.
It amazes me that they can come up with that.
Well, I look at it this way. Do statistics lie or do... No, let's see. Do figures lie or do liars figure? Okay. I don't know. I don't personally, if you want my honest opinion, I don't put a whole lot of stock into any of this, personally, okay? But this is the way it's done in the industry, and this is the way a lot of media people and advertisers will measure things. And there's all kinds of things. You know, it gets so involved with just looking at all this kind of stuff, they just oftentimes totally forget that the objective is to get people through the door. I mean, you get so bogged down in all this quantitative analysis that what the client is trying to accomplish is get that warm body in the door and sell them something is totally lost. So I don't put a whole lot of stock in this, and I don't you know, typically do a lot of this. But I want you to understand it because you will run into people that do. Okay.
Some media reps, they've got a good cue. They'll be using that as a selling piece.
That's right, and they will. And they'll use that and say, "Hey, you need to buy from our radio station because we have the highest cue, or we have the highest average quarter." And I have literally run into clients who I've asked them about their advertising, and I say, "Well, why are you advertising there?" And they say, "Well, because they have the highest average quarter hour of any station in the market." I says, "Well, so what? What does that mean?" And they say, "I don't know. That's just what the radio rep told me." They have no idea what it means or what the advantage of it is. They don't know. Well, what would the advantage be, theoretically, is that you're reaching more people. Your circulation is higher. There's more people that you could potentially reach. Okay, but anyway, the three pieces of information that I want you to be concerned with right now are cume, average quarter hour, and turnover ratio. Because this whole concept of OES is simply this. Based on the research that they have done, and they is, who knows, it tells you in here, this companies have done it, but yeah. What's that?
Canadian
Customs, yeah. According to the research that they have done, that you can optimize your ability to reach the market three times with your message if you use the following formula. And the formula is this. Your optimum effective schedule, in other words, how many ads you should run, equals your turnover ratio times 3.29. This will be on the test. This is a very, very important thing. This will be on the test. You better practice it and work countless examples of this. Okay? So then the optimum number of ads that you should buy to optimize your success would be the turnover ratio times 3.29. So,
in a period of a week.
Yes. The optimum effective scheduling per week. Okay? So you will maximize your success in a week by using this formula. Now, Ben, this is important stuff.
Yeah.
You better get this down. Just kidding.
Well, it doesn't say anything about what time periods, how to spread them out, or just that we should run 33 times a week.
Yeah, we should. In this case, we should run 33. We should run 33 ads a week, okay? Because turnover is 10 times 3.29 equals 33. So the optimum number of ads to run in the week would be 33. Okay? That is based on if you're looking at the cume and the average quarter hour over an average week. Okay, now you can narrow those time slots. So you could take a look at, okay, let's only look at 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then look at the cume and the average quarter hour, and that's going to tell you over that particular time period the number of ads to run. Or you could narrow it down and say only between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m., okay? And that's going to tell you the optimum ads to run during that time frame. But anyway, this tool does have some merit in the fact that it can give you a guideline as to how many ads that you can run. Now, this is like I say, primarily used in radio, because it's difficult to know. I mean, how many ads do we buy? How many should we run? What's going to optimize our success? And this is at least a bit of a rule of thumb. And the other reason why it is important for you to know this, and I've lost that stupid cap again.
It fell on the floor.
It disappears. It goes on. I know, that's so weird. This is like the magical floor. You drop something on there and it disappears. Anyway, the reason why this is important for you to understand is that the reason or the way a lot of media sales reps will go out and sell, they'll go out and say, Rich, you need to buy our station, and the OES is 33, so you need to buy 33 ads. And if you buy 33 ads and run them all this week, you're going to get great success.
Okay.
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that thought process?
First of all, it hasn't given any thoughts to my needs or what my target audience might be.
Assume that my station is your target, we've got the right target and all that. But I say now, Rich, listen, I'll tell you what. If you will buy 33 ads this week, dang, it's going to work. You're going to have great success. You have optimum effective scheduling now.
The message is more important.
All right, that's the key. Doesn't make any difference what kind of a great OES plan I might have if the message is stupid. If it's just a generic institutional kind of an ad with no offer, no sense of urgency, no compelling reason to take action, I don't care how great of an OES gadget you got, it ain't going to work. That's right. That's right. Okay? So this is why I want you as 21st century marketing consultants to, number one, understand these kinds of concepts, and number two, to understand that there are three components. This only takes into consideration, really, one. And that's the frequency. Now, reach is the function, is are we in a place that's reaching the right people? Okay? But just because we have the OEF doesn't mean it's going to be a successful advertising plan. All right? Do you all understand that? Okay, now, on page 35, it talks about two different ways to build frequency. And there are two different ways in which you can achieve frequency. The way that we've just discussed, the optimum effective scheduling, is what's called a vertical approach. But there's another approach called horizontal frequency. And what this means is that you build up the repetition, or you build up the frequency over time. For example, you just run consistently day after day after day after day. And the example here in the book, you buy an ad in the 8 o'clock news every day, every day for 6 months, and every day I get up and I turn on the news at 8 o'clock and I hear your ad every day for 6 months, there's going to eventually be a lot of repetition that's built up in my mind. I'm going to be exposed to that ad a lot. Do you understand that? The time when you would utilize that kind of frequency would be in a situation where the objective, now listen very, very closely to this, all right? You would use that kind of frequency in a situation where the objective is to simply create an equity position in the mind of the consumer, establish the positioning strategy, or educate and serve as a reminder. It is not going to be effective in terms of bringing people to the door immediately.
I'm sorry, it is what? It will not be effective, but it is...
Horizontal frequency. Do you understand what horizontal frequency is? Okay, horizontal frequency is effective for maintaining an equity position, for establishing a positioning in the market, and for educating and serving as a reminder. It's not effective for creating an immediate result. It's not going to get people in the door right now. Does that make sense? Now, remember this morning when I told you that you really, as a 21st century consultant here, you're probably, with most of the local businesses who you are going to work with, you are probably not going to want to have a lot of institutional, generic type, image and positioning type of advertising. There, however, might be some exceptions to that. For example, what if your client is in the plumbing business? Or let's even be more specific. Let's say your client is in the router business. You know, they come out and they router out your drains when they get clogged up. Okay? Now remember, if we put a little graph up here on the board, at one end of the graph we have the image and positioning ads, we'll call those top of mind awareness ads, versus the immediate response. In other words, get me in the door today. Is it possible for the router guy to create want? No. It's difficult. Is it possible for the router guy to create a sense of urgency? You can't. Because in that type of a business, either you need the service or you don't. So I don't care what kind of compelling ads he runs. I don't care how great his offer is. I'm not going to call him if I don't need him. I'm not going to call up and say, "Hey, Joe, I heard your router ad. Just, boy, it's a great deal. Come on out and look at my drains." Nothing wrong with him, but you sure had a great ad. It doesn't work that way. Okay? So he should probably focus most of his advertising efforts on this side of the scale. because what he wants to do, what his objective would be, what would his objective be?
His name, well, top of mind, so when they have a problem, they'll phone
him. Exactly, to keep his name top of mind so that when they have a problem, they will call him. All of a sudden, the drains do clog up, toilets overflow, and I'm thinking, holy geez, who am I going to call? Oh, I'm going to call him because he's got equity. He's got an equity position in my mind, top of mind awareness. It's difficult to create the want. So here's the rule. Here's what you need to think about. If the business is a situation where it is difficult or impossible to create the want, if it's a business where it is difficult or impossible to create the want, then your best strategy is to use a horizontal approach day after day after day after day, constantly creating the top of mind awareness and reminding me that you're there so that when I need you, you come to mind first. Okay? Now, does that make sense? Do you all understand? Are you all with me on that? What would be a good choice of media for doing that with? If you wanted just to create an ongoing, consistent top of mind awareness, what would be a good choice of media for doing that with?
Radio.
Radio could be good, yeah. You could be there every day, buy an ad in the 8 o'clock news, and boom, you'd be right there. Okay, what else? Okay, Yellow Pages would not be. Yellow Pages does nothing to create top of mind awareness. The reason why is because when do you go to the phone book? When I need it. Now, what my objective, if I were consulting a business of that nature, here's what I would say. I would say, it is very important for you to have an ad in the Yellow Pages. However, the objective of that ad is not to create the top of mind awareness. What is the objective of the ad in the Yellow Pages? It's so that when I have the immediate need, I think Roto-Rooter, or ideally what we'd want to do is the drains are clogged up, Roto-Rooter has equity, so I go to the white page. You can look up Roto-Rooter. That would be ideal. Or second best would be the drains are clogged up. Ooh, I need a Rooter service. So I call up Rooter. I look up Rooter in here. Oh, yeah, Roto-Rooter, I've heard of them. I will call them. It's the top of mind awareness and associates with the ad and it, you know, makes me call them. Okay? But what other media might be good for maintaining that ongoing top of mind awareness? No, newspaper is not good for maintaining top of mind awareness. Why? Okay, why would newspaper not be good for maintaining top of mind awareness? Well, you throw it out quick, but also you tell me, which newspaper ads do you tend to pay attention to? Which ones do you tend to read? The thing you're in the market for. If I'm not in the market today for Rooter service, I'm not going to read the Rooter service ad, so consequently, it's not going to create any top of mind awareness for me. Okay?
Television
would be good. Any media, okay, for creating top of mind awareness, creating that ongoing presence in the mind of the consumer, any of the intrusive media would be effective. Now, which are the intrusive media? Radio. Why is radio intrusive? It's intrusive because if I have the radio on, I'm going to be exposed to that Rooter ad whether I want to or not.
Is that why the television commercials always going to have louder than the radio?
Yeah. Television is also an intrusive media because of the same reason. Okay? I will be exposed to that ad whether I want to or not. Newspaper is not an intrusive media because if I'm not interested in the ad, I don't read it. Okay? Billboards will be an intrusive media as well. Okay? Billboards will be an intrusive media because I'm driving down the road, it's there, it's intrusive. Okay?
Yeah.
So does that make sense?
Yeah. What about direct mail to a certain region?
Break. All right, guys, we're back, page 35. We were talking about frequency, and we were talking about horizontal frequency. The other type of frequency is vertical frequency, and what that means is that you run a large number of ads over a short period of time. And what that is designed for is to get the high impact, the immediate response, and get people coming through the door right away.
Having the special,
that's right.
Back up, we're actually talking about good media for the
top of mind. Good media for top of mind awareness. Any of the intrusive members of the media. Intrusive meaning primarily radio, TV, and billboards. Okay, they're intrusive because you don't have to seek out the ads. Yellow pages, you have to seek out the ads. Newspaper, you have to seek out the ads. Direct mail, you have to physically open the envelope. Okay.
Intrusive.
But that wouldn't necessarily be a good one.
Not for maintaining top of mind awareness. No, that's for the immediate. I mean, you wouldn't call somebody. I mean, it would not be a wise investment, I don't think, to just call somebody up. Oh, hi, this is Doug over at Roto-Rooter. Just wanted to remind you that we're here. If you ever need us, give us a call. Bye. That would not be an effective use of telemarketing. Okay? Where telemarketing is successful is in directly selling right now. Okay? So, vertical frequency, then, is a lot of ads in a short period of time, which is designed to, capture that now buyer and high impact and drive traffic into the business. So, your first step in determining the amount of frequency is to decide on either a horizontal or vertical approach, then determine the appropriate numbers. Okay? As a rule of thumb, it's been proven that an effective frequency is 3. That's what we were just talking about with the OES. It means that each person has chosen to only decide 3 times. Okay? So, what I want to say to you guys at this point is this. When you get to the point of doing media placement and you're doing, and it conceivably is going to be a ways down the road before you get to that point, just call me and let me work you through it and help you out.
Go ahead. When you say 3, effectively, 3 how often? Like, is it 3 times an hour, 3 times a day, 3 times?
I don't know.
Okay.
OES that we just went through said 3 times a week.
A week.
See?
But that's not very frequent.
Well, it depends. That's the whole problem I have with this. Because I think it is so dependent upon the message as well. I mean, if the message is compelling, and I only need to be exposed to it one time.
Right.
Okay? And if it's not compelling, it doesn't matter how many times I'm not going to buy.
Okay.
All right? Okay, now media buying and testing. Now once you have completed the plan and the ads are ready to go, the next step is to go ahead and actually place the media. Now there are several ways you can do this. The first way is you become an advertising agent, basically. You buy the media yourself, you mark it up 15% of your client. Now this can be an additional profit center for you. This is what advertising agencies do. This is how advertising agencies make some of their money. Is that they mark up the ads and they charge them back to the client and they make money in the form of a commission.
Doug, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
If you approach these people and say that you are an agent or an advertising agency, will they give you a discount?
Yes. The media, typically they will.
3 or 4 clients, or they must have a number. You must have to have a few clients.
Usually, in Canada, I think they're a little bit more stringent about that. In this country, all you have to do is say, I'm an advertising agency and, I'll place the ads and they'll typically give you a 15% discount. Typically what they'll do is they'll pay you a commission.
Okay.
And then you just go ahead and sell it back to your client at regular price and you keep the difference.
Charge him a commission?
No, usually. Not usually. Usually you charge them other fees. Okay. But now I want to caution you and if you want to get into that, fine. I mean, there's a lot of money to be made there, but there's a big, big risk. And that risk is if you are the agent, you buy the ads, let's say you place a $20,000 ad campaign for your client, and you sign for it, everything's peachy keen until the client doesn't pay you, and the media comes looking to you for the 20 grand. See, that's not a happy situation.
The other problem that I would see with it to some degree is that the radio station offered them, or television, whoever, not just radio, offered them a deal as good as you were offering them, or better. If they have to pull and say, well, I'd like to place 100 ads with that, how much is going to be? That would be a bit of a problem, too.
Yeah. Well, typically, most media, though, will recognize an agency, and they'll work really closely with you, and they'll do that. But what I would suggest you do is not do number one here on page 35, okay? What you want to do is go to page 36 and do number two. You place the media, but they bill the client directly, okay? You still have control, but you limit the exposure. In other words, the client would actually be the one to sign the agreement with the media,
right,
not you, okay? Because that way, he pays them directly. You can charge them, and you then charge a fee back to the client, or you pay a commission, or whatever. But you're not on the hook. Because I've known people who have done it the other way, and they lost everything, because you place a huge media buy for somebody, and then all of a sudden they pick up in the middle of the night and leave town, leave you stuck with the bill, you're screwed. Okay? I mean, because the media then can come after you.
I used to deal with advertising firm in Winnipeg, and the guy, I don't know if he got a commission at the ads he was placing, but I know that I paid him 15% on the invoice. I also know that he doctored the invoice until somebody told me that he was doctoring the invoice. And I also know that I fired him, whereupon my psychotic partner got really upset.
Psychotic partner went nuts, huh? Okay, another way to place the media is you make recommendations and then let the client do it. This is easier for you, but you lose control. The client may or may not actually place the orders, and then when it doesn't work as it should, the whole thing falls apart. When buying media, remember, you can often negotiate better deals than what's printed on their rate cards. Now, not always, but sometimes you can. And if you don't ask, you don't get. So just, ask and see what kind of negotiation you can do. These media reps, they can be a real asset to your consulting practice. I mean, I would highly recommend that you try to establish some alliances with some of these guys. And, like Ray, and go tell him, what you're doing, and say, listen, we can help your clients, and blah, 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 blah. I mean, they can be a tremendous, tremendous asset,
right,
referring you to help clients.
Right.
You could even work back a little finder's fee to them or whatever, because, everybody benefits. If you can help their clients to make more money and be more successful in their business, chances are they're going to buy more ads, and, everybody wins. So I would strongly urge you to try and establish some of those kinds of alliances. Okay? Now, testing. The first rule of marketing, test, test, test. Same holds true with your media advertising. However, do not fall into this trap of testing by trying to source individual media. What I mean by that is you're going to be conducting an exercise in futility if you get into a situation whereby you start asking people, what brought you in? You're never, ever going to be able to figure that out. And a lot of lives, a lot of people get totally bogged down and frustrated in trying to figure that kind of stuff out. The reason why you're never going to figure that out is because people find out about stuff from a lot of different ways, okay? Just like our little scenario we went through with the Michelin tires. Saw it on the TV, heard it on the radio, read it in the newspaper, saw it in the yellow pages. Well, which one was it brought him in? It was a synergy of all of them working together. So don't get bogged down in trying to test that. What you want to test, though, are all of the other aspects of the campaign. Test the price, the headline, the offer, and you'll find that there can be some some real differences in how, you know, these different prices and different concepts work. So I want you to really read this and study this section here on testing on pages 36, 37, 38, 39, and 40, 41. And let me just tell you this, that you can do some low-cost, no-cost testing that will save you lots and lots and lots of money. Okay? For example, before your client goes out and runs a great big campaign, and you're not sure exactly what price to offer, or you're not sure of exactly what the headline might be or whatever, one simple way to find out is take, you know, the different headlines or different ideas that you are experimenting with, write them out on little 3x5 cards, and then have the client, you know, talk to a number of his customers or prospects or people that you know and say, hey, tell me, which one of these is most compelling? It costs you really nothing to do that, but yet it will save you a heck of a lot of money in the long run in determining, you know, where our best success is going to come from. In doing a mass mailing, obviously, you want to test that. Don't mail out to all 30,000 until you've tested on, you know, just a few hundred to see which offer, which price, which headline, and so on is going to work the best. This is a very, very critical rule, and it can save thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. So what are the components that you should test? What components of the campaign should you test?
Headlines,
offer, pricing, guarantees, bonuses, everything. And only test one component at a time. In other words, you couldn't run a test and have, you know, one idea over here that has a different headline, different offer, and different price, and this one over here has a different headline, different offer, and different price. You could not get a good indication because there's too many variables. You can only test one variable at a time. So in other words, test this price, have a different price, everything else is the same. Or have a different headline, everything else is the same. Different offer, everything else is the same. Okay? And that way you can determine which is going to pull the best and do the better job for you.
Three different offers all with the same headline, the same.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Don't try to test multiple variables at once. Okay? If you're testing headlines, everything should be the same except the headline. If you're testing pricing, everything should be the same except the pricing. If you're testing the guarantee, everything should be the same except the guarantee. See, that's how you determine if that, you know, how that particular component of the campaign is going to work.
Can't you test, though, a whole piece at a time? For example, you may have two very different mailing pieces, but you mail them both to the same audience. You mail, you know, 500 of this piece to have a certain list, and you mail 500 of that piece to a certain list, and measure your percentage back, and that tells you which piece is better.
Yeah, that would tell you which piece is better. Yeah, okay. But what I'm saying is this. If you are trying to determine, for example, at what price to sell it for, okay, you don't know what price you want to offer it at. So the only way to determine the best price is to test several different prices. But if you do that, everything else has to be exactly the same. Because if it wasn't, then I wouldn't know if it was the price or the headline or whatever else it was that made the difference. Okay, so you know, you can only test one variable at a time. Now, you can test two entirely different mailing pieces, for example, and that'll tell you which mailing piece works better, but you're not going to know why. You're not if it's the headline or the price or whatever, the product or, you know, okay? Yeah, as long as bringing a response. But see, the big mistake that so many businesses make is they don't test, and they'll go ahead and they'll totally abandon something that they have been doing to go to something brand new that's totally untested, unproven, and spend a tremendous amount of money. Like Richard told you the story about the artist that mailed like 30,000 pieces without testing and spent, you know, a wad of money, and it didn't work. I had another guy. He makes these bags that, you know, they're all different kinds of bags, like when you go on a cruise or something, you get a bag and it have like the name of the cruise line on it, and he makes these golf bags that you use, like when you're traveling on an airplane, you put your golf clubs in it, and he makes all kinds of different bags. Well, he got this great idea of doing some kind of producing these bags that like schools and churches and groups could use as fundraising projects. I don't know where he got this idea, but he came up with this great idea. And he went out and he spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and he produced these really nice full-color brochures that described this great fundraising opportunity and all this. And then he spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars mailing out thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of these things all over the country. No response. None. Nothing. Nothing happened at all. And it cost him, I think it was like, you know, 30 grand to do all this. Now, as a 21st century marketing consultant, had you have been talking to this fellow at the outset, what would you have recommended?
Test.
Let's find out if this is something that these kinds of groups are going to want. Now, how could he have tested on a smaller scale, on a no-cost, low-cost basis, and figured out?
Go to schools in the area.
That's right. Yeah, he could have gone out, called up, you know, half a dozen schools in the area, sat down with them, and asked them what they thought of it. I mean, that would have sure saved a lot of money. Okay?
Or mail out 200 of them.
Yeah, or mail out 200. You know, just do up a little letter on his word processor and mail it out and see how it works before you go out and invest in, you know, full-color printing and all of that stuff. You see? A lot of business owners don't do that, and the reason why is because they, number one, they don't know, and secondly, he gets this great idea. He thinks that because it's a great idea, that everybody else is going to think it's a great idea. So where's the first place he goes? He goes to the printer and says, gee, I'd like to make up this brochure to mail out, and the printer, man, he's going to say, yeah, you need 50,000 of them, you know, because obviously...
Give you a full discount.
The other thing on something like that that would be very critical is that... brochure, whose hands that brochure ended up in? Because if it ended up in the principal's hand at the school, the principal wasn't much of a fundraising guy, didn't really care about it. He wasn't in charge of the football team or the SRC or anything else.
Said there were a lot of aspects that needed to be
solved. So if it had gotten into the coach's hand, mm-hmm. He was under the gun to raise some money to take his ball team down to the ball tournament.
Yeah.
The coach may have looked at it and said, yeah, this is a crackerjack, and he would have promoted it.
That's right. So, see, so what are the variables then that he should have tested? Well, first of all, he should have tested to see if there is any interest in this at all. Secondly, he should have tested who's the person that needs to find out about it. Then he should have tested the pricing and you know, then the headlines and, you know, the whole deal. Test every element of the campaign, and it would have saved him a tremendous amount of frustration and expense, and, you know. I told about this lady I'm working with that has developed that little school planner for kids, you know, called the Kids Planner. Well, she thought it was a great idea. She came up with this thing and immediately went out and bought a great big huge newspaper ad in the Salt Lake Tribune before Christmas and tried to sell these things. You know, I think the ad cost her like, I don't know, it was like $800 or something, and she sold $50 worth of these planners. I mean, what's the point? So... she should have, again, tested it, you know, and she could have tested it in a number of ways by, again, just, you know, getting a group of mothers together and saying, would this be something you'd be interested in buying for your kids? Huh? $24.95. Well, yeah, see, that's the other thing. I don't know if the price is too high, too low, or whatever. Okay, it's $24.95. Her cost to produce the thing is $18.
Oh, really?
So... you know, she doesn't have a lot of margin in there to work with. I mean, you got to sell a lot of planners to justify a $800 newspaper ad.
And she probably never sat down and figured out how many of these I would have to sell to make an $800 newspaper ad profit.
That's right. She didn't. And, you know, you figure she's only making about,
six, seven bucks
each. I mean, she's going to have to sell... like over 100 of these things just to pay for the ad. You know?
Whoa.
I mean, and guys, it's sad, but you see this stuff all the time, day after day after day. Whereas if these people just talk to you first, you could save them all that frustration. That's why there's such a big need out there for what it is that we do. So anyway, test. Does that make sense? All right. Now, let's see. What's next? Some of these books have yellow. Okay, you have newspapers. You have yellow pages. Oh, these books got.
Oh, they're yellow pages. I can switch to yellow pages. I'm easy.
Yeah. Well, no. I wanted to go over this newspaper information here first. Okay.
So mine's backwards.
Yeah, yours is backwards. See, I don't even know how you got the manual that you did. I know I did, but I'm not sure where it came from, because I thought there was only one of these manuals, only one that had yellow pages in it. All the rest were just photocopies. But
I like it. It's nice.
Yeah, well, it is. So I won't even charge an extra fee for that.
Good.
Okay. All right. Now I have given you some really dandy information in your manual here. This newspaper ad ratings report from Starch Hooper. This is kind of an interesting deal. How big of an ad should an advertiser buy in the newspaper?
As big as possible is what the media consultant says.
That's right. Now, what's the newspaper rep going to say? Big as ad as possible. Why? You'll be seen more. You'll get more impact, and I will make more commissions.
Oh, usually doesn't say that.
He doesn't. But that's what they're thinking. He doesn't say that, but that's what they're thinking, right? And what do we know now? How big of an ad should we buy? What did I tell you this morning? How big of an ad should you buy?
Depending on what you're selling, one that's big enough.
One that's big enough to tell the story. Is a bigger ad better?
It depends if you got a big story.
Okay. Message aside. Assuming I can tell the story in a big ad, small ad, doesn't matter. Is a big ad better? Now, if you go to the newspaper person, they're going to say a big ad is better because you'll get more people to see it. The word they use is impact. They'll say you get more impact from a bigger newspaper ad.
Well, you've got to have something to catch people's eye.
Okay.
All
right. My question, though, still is a bigger ad going to give you more results just because it's bigger?
I would guess
no.
The answer is no, or else you wouldn't be asking.
That's right. I am very persistent with this. Same thing is true in radio and TV. A 60-second ad, just because it is a 60-second ad, is not going to be better than a 30, just because it's twice as long. Okay? You use whatever time, whatever space you need to get the job done. A bigger ad is not necessarily a better ad. Okay, now what you have here is newspaper ad ratings, which was produced by a company called Starch, INRA Hooper. Now, what they do is they and this is done for the television industry, so take that in mind. But anyway, what they do is they survey newspaper ads and newspaper ad readers to determine if a bigger ad is necessarily a better ad. Surveyed thousands of different newspapers, thousands of different newspaper ads, newspaper readers across the country. Bottom line, what the results of this survey are is that a bigger ad is not necessarily going to be a better ad. All right? For example, if you will go to page 4 of this study, noting score by ad size, bigger isn't always better. In general, for both Monday to Friday and Sunday, the larger the ad size, the larger the noting score. But an average full-page ad does not get a higher score than an ad a column or so smaller. As a matter of fact, the weekday noting score increased for a slightly smaller ad. This gain is probably a function of the readership of the news that it is used to fill up the page. Okay, so in other words, what that means to you... Say this is a newspaper ad. That's a newspaper page, okay? You have a full-page newspaper ad, or you could run a smaller ad that's only, say, that big. what they have discovered is that this ad will actually have higher notability than the full page ad. The reason why is because there's going to be news here, okay? And so people are going to maybe stop at that page to read the news. Consequently, they will see the ad, as opposed to a full page ad where